We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The discussion turns back to stocks and financial markets and the Dow theory and a lot of the things we've been talking about for a while now. Hey, real quick, before we get started, though, we talked about investing in comic books in the Last Gains podcast. If you didn't hear it, go check it out. It is certainly an interesting conversation. And I'm curious how many of the Gains listeners are now exploring that investment option. I'm just starting to learn about comic books and the comic book market, and we'll let you know when I make a buy. I'm planning to dabble. But like I said, today we're talking markets, Dow theory, and stocks. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. So as mentioned, we're talking Dow theory, and that means we're bringing on Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter, and author of Winning with the Dow's Losers. And he's got that special website that's just perfect for the Gains listeners. Give us that real quick, Chuck.
Sure. That website is upsidestocks.com, upsidestocks.com.
And you definitely want to check that out. So, Chuck, you know, we've seen quite a turnaround for stocks. And we always talk Dow theory with you, obviously. All along, we've been kind of focusing on those lows for both the Dow Industrials and the Transports, both put on the, June 17th?
Correct.
The Dow Industrial, 29,888.78. The Dow Transports, 12,868.60. Those are lows we've been watching. Big turnaround for stocks, though, in the last month or so. What is the Dow theory telling us now about markets? You know, what needs to happen for us to get the, you know, the Dow theory has been bearish. What needs to happen to turn the Dow theory bullish? So I guess to start things off, Chuck, kind of set the table. You know, we've watched those lows, but a lot has happened since June 17th.
Yeah, let me kind of walk you through it. And there's two possible scenarios here, and quite honestly, two possible interpretations of the Dow theory, and I'll tell you kind of our interpretation at this point. As you mentioned, both the Dow Jones Industrial and Dow Jones Transportation averages bottomed, or the most significant bottom, recent bottom, is the June 17th lows, and you gave those points out. What happened since then is that you have had a series of higher highs in both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and Dow Jones Transportation Average. And the one high that was eclipsed that potentially you could argue was meaningful was the June 24th high, which was in the Dow Industrials. That June 24th high was about 31,500. So you had, from the June 17th low to that June 24th high, unfortunately, it was only about four trading days. And then you had the market decline, held the previous lows, and then came back and went above that June 24th high. So you could argue that when it went above the June 24th highs in both the Dow Industrials and Dow Transports, you know, you can make an argument that that was a change in the primary trend from bearish to bullish. The fly in the ointment there from our perspective is that rally off the June 17th lows was only, as I said, four trading days. And so while there is time compression in the markets these days, and things do take shorter time frames than they used to in the past, 4 days is awfully short. So where we are coming down and saying, listen, you know, that maybe that will, in, you know, hindsight, turn out to be the beginning of the next up leg, the next bull market leg. But we're, but to have confidence in the signal, we're looking at the rally from June 17th, the low, through pretty much, you know, yesterday's high of 32,845 as all one big rally off the bottom. And so what you need then is a reasonable retest of the previous lows from probably these levels that we just achieved here, given the way the market behaved today. So, you know, you would expect to have in a typical retracement anywhere from, you know, 800 to 1600 points from that 32,845. So that's what we're kind of waiting to see. And that's where, you know, not to get too thick in the weeds, but that's where some of the disagreement could come into play in terms of Dow theorists. Was this a new bull market signal when the industrials and transports went above that June 24th highs, or just not enough time? And is this basically a continuation of the rally off the lows? And we're establishing now those rally points. We're going to get a retest. Hopefully the retest is successful. And then we'll get a rebound above these levels. So that's kind of where we are right now, Andy. And hopefully, you know, the Dow theory is one of those things that's almost easier to show you than tell you. But long and the short of it is we're going to have a greater confidence in saying the trend has changed from bearish to bullish once we see how the market behaves coming off this recent rally and whether those June 17th lows hold or not.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about time compression. Usually this stuff takes weeks, if not months, to play out. And then the other thing, and we were actually talking earlier today, Chuck was on the noon business hour, and before he went on, we were kind of chatting markets a little bit. And the one thing I mentioned to you is those lows that were put in and then the market trading after just didn't really feel like a washout or a bottom. And so just kind of pick up on those two points that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, again, to, you know, when you're trying to determine whether, you know, a market has truly laid a bottom, there are a few things that you really look for. One is, you know, how is the market responding in effect to negative news? And the reason why that is important is markets are forward looking. So markets should be discounting the future. And if you see markets that are holding up and individual stocks that are holding up on what seemingly is negative news, that's the kind of stuff from which bottoms are formed. And we have seen that here. If, you know, today notwithstanding, we have seen the market respond pretty favorably to, you know, what was a horrendous June inflation report, what has been some sketchy earnings.
We were talking about that, where you'd have a company that would report really bad earnings, maybe even not give the best forecast, and actually move higher on the news. And you mentioned, talk about the two inflation reports we were talking about. The first one wasn't even as bad. The market got hit. And then this latest inflation reading, which was worse, pick up that, was worse. Actually, the market rallied. Explain that.
Right. So if you go back to June, I believe it was June 10th, the May inflation report came out. And it showed pretty lousy inflation numbers. And if you remember, the Dow Jones Industrial Average on that single day fell 880 points. So that was June 10th. Fast forward now to the most recent inflation report that came out not too long ago that showed June inflation was even worse than May inflation. And what did the market do? Well, the market was fairly resilient and then proceeded to kind of go up and go above those June 24th lows and go significantly above those over the last few weeks. So, you know, that was significant in a sense of trying to determine just how much the market has discounted future negative, you know, negative news. And so that's one of the things you need to see. The other thing you want to see is just, you know, total capitulation, this phrase that keeps getting thrown around. But basically what it means is everybody hates stocks and nobody wants to own stocks and they're never going to own stocks again because they're just awful investments. We didn't quite get there. Now, there are certainly some investors that probably feel like that if they had focused their portfolios on, you know, meme stocks, or if they focused them on a lot of those crazy growth stocks or SPACs or whatever that, you know, didn't have profits, were trading at, you know, 80 times sales. And those stocks just have gotten obliterated. They're down 50, 60, 70, 80%. those people probably feel the world has ended and they're probably never going to get into stocks again. But in the macro sense, it didn't feel like we quite had that capitulation by all investors. Now, one of the tools that we use, that I use to try to give me a determination of the level of investor exuberance or despair, is looking at the percentage of stocks that are trading above their 200-day moving average, the 200-day moving average kind of being a proxy for a stock's equilibrium price. So if you see lots and lots of stocks trading above that, stocks are popular. If you see very few stocks trading above that and many, many stocks trading below it, stocks are out of favor. Well, that percentage got down to about 16%. In other words, 84% of the stocks in the New York Stock Exchange were trading below their 200-day moving average as proxy equilibrium price. And that has not been the lowest it has ever been since we were tracking this since 1989. The low has been about 1% to 2% at the bottom of the 2008-2009 bear market and at the bottom of the 2020 brief but biting bear market. But 16% is still very low relative to what we have seen historically. So, you know, that's where, you know, mid-teens on that, that showed a pretty significant level of capitulation. The question is, was it enough? And I guess we'll find out here over time. So there were things evident that could give you some cause to think the market had bottomed, and then followed by, again, the move to above the June 24th highs and follow through on that move in a series of higher highs, not just in the Dow Industrials, but also, and this is significant, in the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which is very economically sensitive. So you were seeing some things that really indicated, A, maybe the market has bottomed, B, trends that you would like to see when the primary trend is potentially going to be changing from bearish to bullish. And again, the last thing we kind of want to see now before we make this declaration of a new bull market is, how does this market respond following a correction or a pullback from this big rally that we've had since June 17th? If the June 17th lows hold, we get a resumption of the upward rally that eclipses this recent high, then that gives us a fair amount of confidence. Then, okay, I think that we can say that the trend has changed from bearish to bullish.
Okay, we're going to continue the discussion with Chuck Carlson right after the break. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I've been told that's podcast gold, and I'd appreciate the solid there. And subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We'll be right back with Chuck after the break.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
All right, back with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. Now, I know you're not an all-or-nothing shop, so you're buying and selling in and out of markets regardless. I would imagine that you are nibbling a little bit, and we talked about this. You indicated that kind of the setup here, and talk about that real quick, about just not being an all-or-nothing shop. And then when it makes sense to nibble, you will do so.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one thing to kind of make these declarations that we're in a bull market or a bear market, and that's all well and good, and that's useful information. But at the end of the day, you know, as an investor, you have to have a certain pragmatism about you, and part of that pragmatism has to say, listen, the likelihood of me spiking an exact bottom and then starting to invest everything at that bottom, the chances of that happening are pretty slim. And so what you want to do as an investor, especially if you're somebody who has built up significant cash throughout this decline and you're waiting to deploy that cash, is at some point you have to start the process. It doesn't mean you throw it all in at once, but, you know, where do you start the process? And, you know, we have started to that process in a fairly small way, I want to add. We haven't gone gangbusters, but we have started the practice of perhaps putting some of the cash back into the market, taking advantage of some of these opportunities, looking if the market declines more, maybe feeding a little bit more in. So starting the process. Now, that's not meaning, you know, plunge it all in and you're getting to 100% invested, you know, boom, right now. But you got to start that process at some point, and there's enough indicators here and stocks at enough attractive valuations that we feel that you can start that process. Now, what does that mean, starting the process? Well, you know, if you're somebody who's sitting there with, you know, 30% equity exposure and it's normally 90%, then you probably need to start getting some money, you know, whether that's, you know, you got to put 10% in, 20% of your cash in.
Or will you dollar cost in there? Do you use dollar cost tactics when you're implementing it back in, or how do you do that?
You can. We typically, you know, part of that depends, I think, on the size of your cash position. You know, it's easier to kind of carve out dollar cost averaging per se, just from a practical standpoint. If you're sitting on 70% of your portfolio's cash, it's easier to kind of go, okay, I'm going to start putting in 10% a month or 15% a month, or I'm going to put 20% in now and then 10% a month. You know, we typically don't go to those levels of cash. You know, a big cash position for us is, you know, in a portfolio where somebody is 100% or could be 100% invested in stocks, you know, we might be, you know, 65 to 75% equity. So, you know, that.
Even at the bottom, even at the worst of things, I mean, you are a lot more fully invested than some folks. So even at the worst of it, you're still 65, 70, 75% in equities riding it out.
Yeah, we are. And there's a number of reasons for that. That may sound a little silly to some folks. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I've been watching the markets for 40 years, and you have to approach them with a certain humility. And part of that humility is you can be wrong. And if you're wrong on holding too much cash, that's worse than being wrong if you ride through, because, you know, you can, if you're 100% invested and you ride through a bear market, you know, you're going to feel that pain. But history says that at some point you're probably going to be okay if you can hang in there long enough and not do something stupid like sell at the bottom. On the other hand, if you're kind of making all or nothing bets and, you know, you've got 0% equity or you've got 20% equity and you're somebody with a long-term investment time horizon, it's very difficult to kind of, when you've made that big a bet to get out of the market, it's a very difficult thing to get back in, because you're going to be concerned about your timing on getting back in, that you're going to get in too soon, or if you don't get in, it's going to be too late, and you're going to wait for the next pullback, and consequently, you're never back in. So we acknowledge that the biggest risk in investing is not so much being in the market when it goes down, but being out of the market when it goes up, and we take that into account when we try to calibrate cash levels. And as I said, typically, you know, we've got 25 to 35% in cash in a portfolio where somebody could be 100% invested. That's a pretty good chunk for us. So to get back to your original question, do we dollar cost average? Typically we don't. What happens is it's kind of more organic, where there may be stocks already in the portfolio that have fallen below what we would like to be our target level. So if there's stocks we still like, we may go in and add to those current holdings to bring their weighting back up. We may have some new recommendations that we put money into in stocks that have fallen to levels that we like, and it's a stock that we have liked for a while, and now we feel it's time to buy. So it tends to be more opportunistic, I guess would be the word, as opposed to the practice of putting certain amount of money into the market on a regular basis, the dollar cost averaging. Not that there's anything wrong with that. In fact, that is a very good way for an individual investor because it's done in a disciplined way. And it also requires less kind of putzing around looking at stocks, right? You know, and I mean, you know, it's, a lot of us have jobs and the jobs aren't in the market where you're looking at things all the time. So it's tougher to be kind of opportunistic because you may be doing something else. So a dollar cost averaging approach kind of ensures it is a disciplined way to get money back into the market. And that's always a good thing.
Chuck, there is nothing else. There is nothing else. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Right. But no, I get what you're saying. And again, this is a long-term gain or long-term game. And the one thing I went back just for the heck of it to look at the length of bear markets. Now, keep in mind, a lot of times you work through this stuff pretty quick. I mean, the last one we always talk about was 33 days. And then there was a quickie in January to like March in 2009. That was 62 days. 2000, 2008, the big one, there's like 408 days. So even that is just a year. And in a very long-term game, what's a year in the whole scheme of things? So
yeah,
that's
the recovery period from that, you know, maybe it takes, you know, well, it all depends. I mean, some can come back in the period of months where you recoup what you lost, and others, maybe it takes 2 or 3 years. But, you know, unless you're, you know, 85, and even, you know, apologies to all 85-year-olds listening. My point is, you know, most people that are hearing the sound of my voice here have enough time to recover from a typical bear market. You know, they typically, and again, maybe the next one is going to be unique, but, you know, it's typically not, you know, 10 years before you get back whole. You know, it's usually a much shorter period of time, which, again, puts a huge burden on this notion of I'm going to be able to get in, I'm going to be able to get out, I'm going to be able to get back in again, and you play that game. That's why, you know, traditional market timing is very difficult to do, especially in an all or nothing fashion.
When you are getting back in, you know, we've seen growth just get crushed, but more so than other areas, of course. What's the mix look like? How do you decide for your clients on what you're buying when you get back in? And I mean, it's not necessarily always the best idea to just the stuff that was beaten the absolute worst is what you're going to get back in. And are you still going with big names, good names, or, you know, how do you determine what the mix that you're buying when you are nibbling and getting back in? And, you know, if you think that the bottom's in, you know, what are you buying?
That's a good question. Now, we have a pretty disciplined process that's buttressed by our quantitative stock rating system we call Quadrix. We have a tool that we created. It's proprietary to Horizon that evaluates more than 4,000 stocks. Each of those stocks we're ranking on more than 90 different variables, and we're scoring those variables and coming up with quantitative scores for those 4,000 stocks. So, you know, we're constantly getting feedback in terms of what stocks are scoring well. Are these, you know, do we like them? And then our analysts kind of pull apart the ones that score well and try to figure out whether those are stocks that we want to own. So we don't necessarily take the step back and go, this is going to be a value-led rally. It's going to be a growth-led rally. Now, having said that, does some of that analysis kind of peter into our process? It can't help but do that because, you know, you're going to have some ideas on various themes, whether growth versus value. I personally think that the sweet spot of this market is going to be growth stocks, but not the crazy growth stocks. The growth stocks that you can still buy at reasonable valuations, kind of a GARP approach, growth at a reasonable price,
like the Apples and the Googles and that kind of thing.
Yes, I do. And the reason why I think that is going to be the case is that there is no doubt that the economy is slowing. Now, whether you want to call it a recession, you don't want to call it a recession, whatever you want to do. And a lot of times, you know, that's a fight over semantics. The fact of the matter is the economy is slowing. How much it's going to slow, you know, that's still up for debate. Are we going to get into a deep recession? You know, that's up for debate. I don't think that's going to be the case, but there's no doubt that we are seeing a period of slowing growth. In periods of slowing growth, growth becomes more highly sought after because it's a rarer commodity in a slow growing economy. So in those sorts of markets, growth stocks tend to do better. Growth stocks also tend to do better in environments where interest rates are flat or falling and inflation is flat or falling. And, you know, it's not a reach to kind of see that world out there where you have a slowing economy. You know, we have rates. I mean, geez, the 10-year treasury just went to, 2.5. It's down 100 basis points since, June? So, you know, all the talk about rising rates, and maybe that's going to happen. And if it does, that's going to be a strong headwind for growth stocks. But at this point, that doesn't appear to be the case. And then finally, you know, inflation is kind of the last remaining thing. It's the peak inflation narrative seems to be truer to me. The big question is not so much is inflation going to get worse, but how quickly and deeply is it going to get better? And that's kind of the $64,000 question. But again, I think those things add up to where value led the way in the first half of the year. I think if you had to pick between growth or value, I think growth is going to lead in the second half of the year. So, you know, if you tilt your picks toward reasonably priced growth stocks and try to get those kind of growth value combo platters where you can buy a growth stock at a value stock price, to me, that's the sweet spot. And that's oftentimes the sweet spot, quite frankly. It kind of, those are the stocks that kind of give you your cake and eat it too.
You know,
so
I'm
mentioning a couple of names. You know?
Yeah, I'm going to say, you know, I'm digging for names. And so kind of give me a couple ideas that you're feeling right now, and then maybe pull something off that upsidestocks.com list as well.
Yeah, a couple of large cap names. You know, you mentioned, Alphabet fits in that. I think a stock like ON Semiconductor, Qualcomm, United Health is a nice solid kind of growth at a reasonable price stock. Thermo Fisher Scientific, those are some names that I think in this environment should hold up pretty well. Another stock that in the small cap space that I like, small mid cap spaces, and I mentioned this before, is Nexstar Media Group, NXST, which has been a real nice performer here and has held up quite well during this market environment. And that's, you know, that's a name that we like. Another name is, the symbol is PLAB. That's Photronics. Symbol's PLAB. It's about $1.5 billion market cap. And the stock trades for about $24 a share. That's hung in there very well. And I would expect that stock, that's one of my favorites in the upside portfolio. So those are two names, Nexstar Media and Photronics, PLAB, the symbol.
You know, as we're talking stocks here, I just a couple little areas I wanted to touch on real quick. You know, we always talk about how the transporters are leading indicators. As we're coming out, do they tend to lead higher? Or is there anything that's catching your eye in the transports? Is that an area that you'd deploy a little more cash to because you know that, you know, if things turn around, they generally do well coming out?
Yeah, that's you're absolutely right. They tend to be kind of a leader coming out. So it's nice to see them. You know, you need them in any kind of sustainable rally. You need those transport stocks to be doing well. It's very difficult to the market to sustain much of anything to the upside without their help. And in that group, you know, the one stock that's pretty interesting and it's come flying off its bottom. I mean, you know, back in you know, June 13th, 14th, it's, you know, it's trading for about $200 a share. Now it's up to about $233. So you've got, 15% gain in less than 2 months. It's FedEx, symbol FDX. I think if the transports, it's a big per share priced stock, so it matters to that index. It's $233 a share. And as you know, the Dow Transports is a price-weighted index. which means higher price stocks have a greater influence. So it's, you know, if the Dow Jones Transportation Average is going to do well, it's very difficult for it to do well if you have FedEx not doing well. So if you want kind of a proxy for the transports, I think FedEx is as good as any, and it's a stock we do like.
How about oil? That was the one other area. Oil companies have done fairly well over this time period. Some of them throw off some nice dividends. What are your feelings on big oil?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a harder situation on a shorter term basis, say for the remainder of the year, and I'll explain why in a moment. I think, you know, 12, 24 months, that's a group that you should own and have exposure to. And one of the reasons you kind of hit it is, you know, you're not going to find a group that's offering better cash flow, dividend flow, and a growing dividend stream. And I think that still resonates with investors and is still important. Where I think you might see a little bit of a respite for that group relative to the market is the fact that those stocks typically don't cluster around the quote growth stock area. Those tend to be looked at more kind of like value stocks. And again, if the thesis that growth is going to be value in the second half of the year, my guess is these stocks, the oils have a little bit of a rougher hoe. Now, somebody could say, well, what are you talking about, Chuck? These oil stocks are growing like gangbusters here. Just look at the profits of BP today, or what Exxon produced the other day, or Chevron. And you make a point. But I mean, historically, those aren't the sorts of kind of growth stocks that tend to move with growth stock-led markets. And so I'm not saying you should leave the group, but I'm just saying you should have some – your expectations should be tempered a little bit for the second half of the year, I think.
Another one that I just wanted to throw out there, because I know it's something that you and I have talked about in the past, is Philip Morris. That's one stock that I've used to get a little shelter, and you know, it has a nice little dividend. What's your thought on like a Philip Morris? And for some of those stocks that you have held to get a little shelter that, you know, throws off some good income and, you know, holds up pretty well, regardless of how the economy is. Well, what's your feeling on those type of stocks?
Yeah, they're still nice stocks to have in a portfolio because, you know, and we've talked about kind of this idea of barbelling your portfolio, where at one end of the barbell, maybe you have more of the hot seat growth stocks, more kind of the growth stocks, speculative stocks, a little higher risk stocks. And at the other end of the barbell, you kind of balance that out with kind of the steady eddy stocks, the lower volatility, lower beta stocks, and Philip Morris certainly falls in that category. And I still think while it's a stock that, again, if this is a growth led market in the second half of the year, Philip Morris will not necessarily be among those leaders. But that doesn't mean you can't make money in the stock, and it doesn't mean that, you know, that dividend yield of 5% is pretty tasty in this environment. So it's a stock I think has fairly limited downside, may not have all the upside some other stocks might have in a growth-led market, but it's certainly that and some other stocks. You know, we've got some stocks in our portfolios that kind of fall into that category. One that, you know, probably kind of tilts toward that kind of steady eddy approach is, you know, a number of the insurance companies, for example, which, you know, they're kind of steady. They're putting up decent numbers. They're never going to be at the top of the leaderboard in terms of growth stocks. But, you know, you've got some stocks like, Elevance Health, for example, and that's the old Anthem. And I mentioned United Healthcare. You've got W.R. Berkley. You've got Chubb. Stocks like that I think are, you know, have pretty good dividend flows. They're, you know, probably not going to be at the top of the leaderboard in a particular year, but they, you know, they just chug along, man. And between the dividend flow and, you know, decent, not exorbitant, but decent, steady capital gains, you can make a lot of money in those stocks.
Well, and diversification is key. I mean, we always talk about that's a big part of a portfolio is, you know, having it diversified in a variety of industries and, you know, having a little a little value and some income isn't a bad idea either. As we wrap up today's Gains podcast, Chuck, what's your takeaway? What do you want to get across to the Gains listeners?
Yeah, two things. One, you know, let's see how this market behaves on the next downspin. Those June 17th lows are still in play, and see if the market, you know, can kind of hold those lows. And then second, if you have been somebody who was fortunate or lucky or smart and has a bunch of cash, you need to kind of start thinking about redeploying that and come up with one way that kind of forces you to do that. Whether, you know, you can start out small, that's fine, but don't wait and then you're going to back up the truck and do it all at once, because you're not going to do that. I guarantee you're just not. So start the process, and I think you can start that process now pretty safely. That doesn't mean you're going to be rewarded immediately. My guess is you won't be. My guess is you're going to put some money in, and then stocks are going to go down, and then they're going to feel like an idiot, and you're going to call me an idiot, and that's okay. But 6 to 12 months from now, you'll probably be happy you started the process. So go start that process, especially if you're sitting on a lot of cash.
Always great advice from Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond, and author of Winning with the Dow's Losers. And again, the website for the Gains listener. Go ahead, Chuck.
That's upsidestocks.com, and that focuses on our favorite small and mid-cap stocks. It's upsidestocks.com, and you can go there and get a free 30-day trial subscription to the newsletter. That's upsidestocks.com.
So that's going to wrap up today's Gains podcast. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We are back next Wednesday, and we're going to talk about fashion and the resale market. I mean, there's money to be made in resale. We're going to talk Poshmark, Depop, Mercari, The Real Real. So be sure to check that out next Wednesday. And I will see you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast powered by Odyssey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.